Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The COVID-19 pandemic hit the world like a hammer, but some communities were hit harder than others. Among the hardest hit in the nation, Native Americans. Health officials confirm our state's COVID death toll among Native Americans has been alarmingly high. Nationwide, based on data from 14 states, the mortality rate from COVID among American Indian and Native Alaskans is 1.8 times that of non-Hispanic whites. In Robeson County, the health director there says the death toll from COVID has been fueled by American Indian deaths. This hour, a closer look at that and at a few other challenges facing what is the largest population of Native Americans east of the Mississippi, right here in North Carolina. Rebecca LeClaire is president of the Metrolina Native American Association and a member of the Lumbee Tribe. Good morning and welcome to you. Good morning. Also, Curry Bird is with us. He's board president for the Triangle Native American Society. He is an enrolled member, and I hope I say this correctly, he is an enrolled member of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oate Tribe of what is now North and South North and South Dakota, and also has a Lumbee heritage. Did I even get that close, Curry?
Very close. Oyate.
Say it again. Say the whole thing.
Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate.
Well, you should know that the pronunciation guide on Google got it wrong, because that's where I got it. Thank you for joining us. And we hope that Linda Oxendine, thank you. We hope that Linda Oxendine will be with us in a moment. She is a regional director of CORE. We'll talk about her bona fides in a moment. Let me begin with you, Rebecca. The Arizona Advisory Committee to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights produced a report in April of this year, reporting on the impact of the COVID pandemic on the 22 federally recognized tribal nations in Arizona. They report not only more serious health outcomes, but suffering that stems from an economic downturn because their lifeblood enterprises focus on the entertainment and gambling industry out there, and they had to close for the pandemic, which further hindered the Indian Health Service in rendering care. That's in Arizona. But as I just said, North Carolina is home to the largest population of Native Americans east of the Mississippi. What have been the most serious impacts of the pandemic in our state?
I assume you're asking that when it comes to American Indian population.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
I mean, deaths for sure. There has been a lot of deaths in North Carolina, especially with American Indians. And I think that's probably been the hardest. And also plus just the unemployment, the hardest on families, that the hardship that families are having to take on this too, especially working families, everything going on with the school systems, with COVID. It's just been a lot of hardship, but I think the deaths more than anything has been a serious toll on the American Indian population in North Carolina.
I think some of our conditions are similar to those in Arizona, but in Arizona, it's more of a spread out community, more deserts and more lack of easy access to each other. Broadband issues with communication purposes, getting the message out about COVID restrictions and COVID susceptibility as far as how it's passed. So just the ruralness of that population, which also translate to our communities here in North Carolina. We're very rural, we have broadband issues, and just that general trust of government help as far as healthcare. I think that also plays into our issues here in North Carolina.
If you go to the websites, which I did yesterday for the Lumbee Indians and the Sisseton Wahpeton Oate tribe, both feature information about COVID and about vaccinations for the virus. And that information is featured prominently on both of those websites. How does the rate, Curry, of infection among Native American populations that you can speak about compare to that in the general population?
Well, I think in especially in South Dakota, where there's the Indian Health Service provides the health care for the tribe. And I think that, like I said, there's a general mistrust of government health care, and based on past historical efforts that the government had made with bringing smallpox into the communities and those types of things. I think in North Carolina, we have the same type of mistrust, but at the same time in Robeson County, we also have a lot of healthcare providers that are American Indian, doctors, nurses, physicians, assistants. So we have that type of assistance in Robeson County in the American Indian community here in North Carolina. But I think ours actually comes down to a political influence. I think Robeson County specifically has turned more Republican voters. And so that general distrust of the majority party that's in power now, I think President Trump kind of created some of the negativity around COVID information. And so I think our community kind of gravitated to that message. Yeah. And they kind of carried that into the COVID vaccines and their unwillingness to take those vaccines, even though there was a good message going out there that vaccines worked.
So what you're telling me, what I hear you saying, and maybe I'm wrong about that, is that the situation with regard to the infection rate and the approach to vaccines in the Native American community here mirrors that in the rural counties in North Carolina, which are also, they seem to be less, the infection rate was higher and the vaccine rate is lower. Would that be accurate?
I would think so. Correct. Mm-hmm. Well, so you think so? Also on that question?
Sure.
I would say yes, it's true. I mean, I don't think we had the same types of distrust in some of our Native communities in North Carolina that were more open to the messaging that vaccines work. I think particularly in Robeson County and that Lummi tribal community, there was a lot of just mistrust because of political messaging. And I think religion as well played a big part in how people were receptive to the messaging from vaccine advocacy and efficacy as well.
Linda Oxendine is with us now. She is Regional Director of CORE, Community Organized Relief Effort. She, too, is a member of the Lummi tribe. She joins us by phone. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning. We had a little trouble connecting with you, but I'm glad we got that sorted out. Tell me, from your point of view, how does the vaccination rate among Native American populations compare to the general population in North Carolina?
Well, what we're seeing here, and I just looked at the numbers this morning for our Lummi people and comparing that to the general population. Of course, everybody is aware that our Lummi people are definitely falling way behind the general population. We, CORE, have been on the street taking surveys to find out why that hesitancy exists. In fact, we're out today. We were out yesterday, and we're out canvassing actually almost every day trying to find out the answers. And I think some of those things have already been stated today. Of course, faith is a large reason of why we're seeing hesitancy. We're definitely seeing fear of the vaccine. You've already talked about some of the things of mistrust of government, certainly is some of the reasons that our Lummi people are not getting the vaccination. And then there's just general reasons that we're seeing across the board with other people of color, whether it's African-Americans, your Latino community, and those are the things that we're trying to address. But I think some of the major reasons that our people are not getting the vaccinations would definitely be mistrust of government. It would also be faith, and then just general fear, lack of information, lack of knowledge due to information that they're getting mainly across social media that's necessarily not true about the vaccine.
Linda, both you and I believe it was Curry who mentioned faith several times. What religious tradition seems to be informing the vaccine hesitancy?
Our people are very connected with God, the Great Spirit, whatever they want to refer to him as. Mm-hmm. And so our people feel like oftentimes that he will protect them from any type of disease, whether it's, you know, COVID. Oftentimes it could be, you know, just something that the doctor has diagnosed him with. So whether it's getting a vaccine with COVID or whether it's getting a flu vaccination, oftentimes they abstain from getting those types of things. I mean, we hear that on the street here. I don't get the flu vaccine either. So that gives me a reason not to also get COVID vaccinations. And so it's just their strong faith and the fact that God is going to protect them from COVID just as he protects them from other things. We'll have a lot of the people in our community that may need to go on dialysis, and they'll choose not to go on dialysis because they're placing their faith in God, that God is going to protect them for whatever season that they are supposed to have longevity of life. And because their faith in God is that he has predestined them for a certain amount of time to live, then they're placing their life in his hands for that protection.
The infection rate appears to be higher among Native Americans for various reasons. What has been the death rate, do we know, either here in North Carolina or across the country from the COVID virus?
Well, anybody? The death rate, I know across globally, we've seen about 5 million. I know here in North Carolina, there's been over 400. We can't definitely speak, or I don't think it's documented as far as the Lumbee itself. I know we were on a program yesterday, and I had one pastor that was leading that program. He himself said that since COVID has began, he's been involved in 75 funerals that were Lumbee people. So that gives us a good idea of how many Lumbee people in our county alone have passed of COVID.
Rebecca, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, American Indian and Alaska Native people are 5.3 times more likely than white people to be hospitalized because of COVID. It's the largest disparity for any racial or ethnic group. And that would seem to indicate, to some people at least, that perhaps Native Americans are more susceptible to the virus than others. If you believe that's true, would it be because of all the things we just talked about, but also things like lower incomes and higher rates of pre-existing conditions or something else, or a combination of all of these things that we're talking about here?
I think it's a combination of all the things. I think it includes everything that Linda and Curry has talked about, but also I think it includes the lifestyle. I think it includes not going to the doctors as often as we should. Pre-existing conditions. Everybody knows that, well, we do as Native Americans, that, you know, diabetes is a serious issue in our community. So we do have underlying health issues. I don't think it's no more than anybody else in other ethnicities.
But are these underlying health issues, are they due to a reluctance to see the doctor because of what Linda just talked about, a faith in the Great Spirit or in God, and that God will take care of you? Or is it because of economic conditions that preclude them from seeing a physician when they need to or want to?
It's both. It's really both. I mean, Native Americans, we live in a very rural community. I mean, those are facts. We live in rural areas. To get to the doctor is not as easy as everybody else. I mean, transportation is a serious issue for our people. So everything ties into that. So yes, economics, lifestyle, everything is factoring into our COVID issues.
I know that
we're
Curry,
also
have 15 seconds, sure. Curry. Go ahead.
Sure. We're also very close-knit communities. I mean, for my family, like I had an very early on.
Let me stop you. And I'll let you come back on the other side and explain that, because I know you're going someplace that we can't do in 10 seconds. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impact of the pandemic on Native American groups. North Carolina has the distinction of being home to the largest number of Native American tribes and individuals. east of the Mississippi. Rebecca LeClaire is with us. She's the president of the Metroline and Native American Association. Linda Oxendine is regional director for CORE, Community Organized Relief Efforts. And Curry Bird is board president in the Triangle area of the Native American Association. And you were talking just prior to the break, Curry, about close-knit communities, perhaps, and how that close-knitted nature has helped exacerbate the situation with the pandemic. Go ahead.
Yes. In July 2020, I had a family in South Dakota who had a birthday celebration, and it was just my great aunt and her kids and her grandkids who got together to celebrate. And all of them got COVID. It was 10 people got COVID. My aunt and one of her daughters, one of my first cousins, died from COVID from that birthday party. She had a son who was severely impacted and was hospitalized. And the others recovered. I've also since had another first cousin in South Dakota, as well as a great aunt here in North Carolina who died from COVID. So it has impacted me personally, but also from the standpoint of, you know, it's because of family gatherings, community gatherings. And that was one of the things that also impacted all of our communities here in North Carolina, as well as nationally, that they were unable to get together to celebrate their culture through powwows or for other church gatherings, homecomings, family reunions. All those things impacted us personally in that regard.
Would I be right, Rebecca, in saying that that is among one of the best traditions of the American Native population, these community gatherings that don't just happen on national holidays, they happen on a regular basis?
Yeah, it's very important to us. I mean, all of our powwows were canceled during COVID, and I mean, that's a serious, that's very important to us for our cultural being. And so, yeah, everything was canceled, and it's very important to us. I mean, even our Sunday dinners are very important to the Native American community. I mean, we all grew up going to grandma's on Sunday. So all of those things have you know, impacted us during this COVID. And yes, all these cultural gatherings is very important to us.
Access to health care nationwide, I'm told, among Native Americans is also an issue. The Indian Health Service, which provides health services for American Indians and Alaska Natives, is reportedly, quote, chronically underfunded and under-resourced, Curry. And that predates the pandemic. Why is that the case?
I think that from a federal government standpoint and from a general population standpoint, they feel like their obligations to the Native American community is no longer needed, no longer a responsibility of the federal government. And I think that was something that was guaranteed during these treaty negotiations back in the early development of our country in regards to, you know, the government was supposed to provide education funding and healthcare funding. But many people kind of feel like, you know, we're past that obligation, and so that's not really needed, and especially for these tribes that are very successful in gaming operations, who are bringing in lots of money. That's not the case here in North Carolina for most of our tribes, because our tribes are state recognized, except for the Eastern Band Cherokee, and so our tribes here in North Carolina don't have access to successful gaming operations. They're successful in other economic developments like business, construction. We have a lot of teachers, a lot of doctors, dentists. So we have other things that have helped us in the long run, but there aren't things that the government has provided us that are benefits that provided to other federally recognized tribes.
NPR reports, Rebecca, that methamphetamines are killing more and more people around the country, especially in some Native American communities, and that was happening also before the pandemic. It may have been worsened in some cases by the pandemic to deal with pain and suffering that came from the COVID pandemic. Is that the case in this region among Native Americans? And if so, was it worsened by the pandemic?
Opioid problems is a serious issue in our rural Native American communities, especially in Robeson County. I don't have the numbers, but I did have them a few months ago, and we were losing Native Americans more to the opioid crisis than we were to COVID. So it is a serious issue. It was a serious issue before COVID, and I think it has ramped up even more since COVID. it hasn't helped that, you know, we're all quarantined, we're staying at home. I think that has escalated the issue. But I think the just everything piling on top of COVID, I mean, of course, alcohol is increased. So, of course, opioids is going to increase. So, yeah, it's a serious issue. Opioid price is a serious issue. But I think most people need to understand that the state recognized tribes do not get the funding that federally recognized tribes get. Even our information is not collected, our deaths are not collected like the federally recognized tribes. So when people see funding going into tribes from the federal government, it's not happening in North Carolina. I think most people need to understand that.
Linda, I want to go back to something we were talking about just a second ago, and that is the lack of the ability during the pandemic, at least during the lockdown portion of the pandemic, of people to get together for family and community gatherings, which is a tradition in the Native American community. American Public Media's Research Lab's Color of the Coronavirus Project reports that as a result of that, this is taking both a mental and spiritual toll on Native American populations. Economic strife, then the pandemic piles on. They can't gather for traditional ceremonies, can't gather for the traditions of sharing meals together in the community. How big a problem has that been? Because I'm told that it's increased suicide attempts and successes.
Yes, and Rebecca is exactly correct in what she is saying. And I just mentioned that we held an event yesterday, and that was one purpose of that event. It was actually a COVID memorial ceremony where we brought in bikers to do a tribute run across the county. And at that event, we had vendors that was addressing mental, emotional, and spiritual care, support, access to support, to eliminate some of those factors that are occurring because of COVID. And it's amazing because we see the same things that happen after we have natural disasters, such as hurricanes, that we have to bring in spiritual support because of the effects that we see, the aftermath that we see after these things happen. So it's definitely true that we are seeing these things occur. They're occurring because of COVID. They're occurring because of effects of COVID. I mean, there's things that happen after COVID. People are seeing, I can't think like I used to think. I mean, I have a person that's on my team that was very sharp, very keen. And now she's telling me sometimes I find myself dazed. And when those things affect people, sometimes they turn to other things to relieve them. And it may be alcohol. Maybe they were a social drinker and now they find themselves drinking more. So we are aware of that at CORE as well. And Rebecca's exactly right with what she is saying. And so we are trying to bring in, you know, other healthcare providers to address those things. And we're making the community aware of where they can go, and or we are bringing those resources into the community to them as well, so that we can, you know, address them before they spiral out of control.
That's Linda Oxendine, who's the regional director of CORE, the Community Organized Relief Effort, which deals with a lot of different things other than just COVID. But you have been given a grant. Your organization's been given a grant from the Health and Human Services Administration to expand COVID community services, primarily for the Lumbee tribe and for Black communities in Robeson County. We've talked a lot on this program about reluctance in the African-American community to get the vaccination because of distrust from the government resulting from medical experiments that date back decades. And with some justification, there is this distrust of government. Anything coming from the government when it comes to putting things in your body is the same true, because one of you mentioned the distrust of government among Native American organizations. Linda, is the same true? What's the root cause of that distrust?
I haven't heard it as much in our African American community, in working with that community, as I have in the Native American Indian community.
That's what I want to talk about. This distrust in the Native American community.
Yes, I just heard a gentleman just last week in a canvas who actually still believes that the government is placing chips in our arms to track us. Yes. So the distress, I just heard it from one of our cultural leaders just yesterday, and he said it to the media. Yes, I mean, if they place smallpox in a blanket, what makes us think that they would still not do something today in an attempt to control the population of the Native American people? So it does still exist among our people as far as they're being reluctant and they're getting the vaccination. So it's still here. We are trying to encourage our people that, you know, in the vaccine, that we do not see evidence of that with COVID, and that we have done our research. And I am a Lumbee. I am an Indigenous woman, and that I have taken the vaccination. My family has taken the vaccination, and that it is safe. And that at, when the vaccine came in or was made available to us, we all were reluctant, you know, I think as a nation, because it was something that was new. It was something that we hadn't experienced during our generation, but that we've all done due diligence. We've all done our homework, quote unquote, and that's pretty much what we tell our community, you know, when we're on the streets. We actually see reluctance, you know, with non-natives coming into our community to talk to our community about the vaccine. So we have lots of non-native partners right across the county line, you know, that have also been given funding to provide, you know, vaccine, you know, education or access to vaccinations. And our community will not talk to them. They will not talk to them. So that shows you the mistrust, you know, outside people of color.
Curry,
and often,
Curry, you have feet in two different tribes, in the Lumbee tribe and also the tribe in North and South Carolina, who's the name of which I'm trying to find very quickly here, the Sisseton Wahpeton Owate tribe. Is this this feeling of distrust in anything governmental, does it span the continent? With justification, I would think, because of what she just mentioned, smallpox in a blanket, the fact that the U.S. government 100 years ago removed Native Americans from their lands, broke treaties that they signed with them. Is there this overwhelming distrust across the country?
I think yes, there is. And I think I think our tribal communities operate very similarly in South Dakota as well as here in North Carolina. I mean, they really rely on each other. So I think that the tribe in South Dakota, I mean, they do tend to rely on not only the families, but also on the other tribal members. I think they're also very connected to the land in which they live on. So a lot of people would say, like, well, why don't they leave and find better opportunities elsewhere? And even here in North Carolina, the Lumbee people are very connected to Robeson County and surrounding counties because that's their homeland. And so they're very reluctant even to come to Chapel Hill to school because it's so far away for them to think about to go 2 hours to Chapel Hill when they want to stay right there in Robeson County. So I think they do have that sense of connection to the land and the distrust of the government and a reliance on each other, their other fellow tribal members. And I think that exists across the country. I think that's one of the things that even with Alaska Natives, I mean, they're very close knit within their communities. And so that I think exacerbated the need to vaccinate, but also the spread of COVID because they were so insulated in their communities.
So Linda, you've talked about the reluctance to get the vaccine, but your organization CORE is very much involved in trying to encourage Native Americans to get the vaccine. You've been running a campaign. I'm sorry. You've been running a campaign. It's okay. You've been running a campaign promoting vaccinations using 17 trusted medical providers as the spokespeople in your area. You've also been providing COVID-19 testing and screenings and delivering food and personal protective gear, at least at the start of the pandemic when everybody was trying to get PPE. Did it have an effect? Is it having an effect? Are you seeing breakthroughs in getting people to get the vaccine?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes. We are definitely seeing a breakthrough. We are definitely seeing a response. We are definitely seeing trust in our organization. People know who we are. And we, whenever we started vaccine, we looked at the numbers of, you know, the Lumbee population. And we know that we're not the only one vaccinating Lumbees. We know that we're not the only one or providing access to vaccinations for our Lumbee people. But we do feel like that we're having a large impact in that by making this information available to them. But we have seen an increase in the vaccination rate. So we do feel like that we are definitely having an impact.
At the end of August, Rebecca, only 34% of Robson County residents 18 or older had been vaccinated. That's the county at large. But according to the Raleigh News and Observer, Native Americans in Robson had the largest share of COVID cases and deaths in that county, and they make up 43% of the population, but they rank lowest for the number of vaccinations. We've talked about some of the reasons why people are reluctant to get those vaccinations. What we haven't brought up is what is also impacting people in the general population, and that is a ton of mis- and disinformation about these vaccines and how they were developed and what they will do to you, et cetera. How much of the reluctance is due to that? Just a misunderstanding, not just distrust, but a firm belief because of the misunderstanding of the misinformation and disinformation that's readily available out there.
I think it had a lot to do with it. I think one of the things I hear often is that, you know, when they started talking about the vaccination, it was get the vaccination, you'll be okay against COVID. Then here comes the second round, and come to find out you got the vaccination and you'll do better off if you get COVID, you know, but it doesn't really prevent you from getting COVID. So that really did not help in the Native American community at all. So I think some of the misunderstanding that has came out has really hurt the Native American community, because misunderstanding leads to mistrust. Native Americans take everything literally. What you say to us is, you know, what we're hearing, you know, whatever you literally say is how we're digesting it. So if you're saying the vaccination is going to protect you from COVID, then turn around, the Delta variant comes out and it's not doing that. But however, you know, you're definitely doing better. I think some of that misunderstanding led to mistrust.
Rebecca LeClaire is the president of the Metroline and Native American Association. She's here with Curry Bird and Linda Oxendine. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Native Americans and their interface with the COVID pandemic and distrust of the government leading to a lot of, and other things leading to a lot of reluctance to get the vaccine, which we're also seeing in the general population. Rebecca LeClaire is president of the Metrolina Native American Association. Linda Oxendine joins us. She's regional director of CORE, Community Organized Relief Effort. And Curry Bird is board president of the Triangle Native American Association. Curry, WRAL Television reports that when the vaccines were released this spring, some tribal leaders, Native American community in North Carolina, said they had to fight to get the vaccines. It was difficult for people in the general population to figure out how to get them, but this sounds different to me than what we experienced in the general population. Can you tell us about that and about what happened? Or do you,
Linda,
know?
Do you know? I don't personally
Maybe
know.
Maybe I'm asking the wrong person. Linda, do you know?
We didn't have that issue in Robinson County, fortunately. We did not have an issue with getting access to vaccines. Our Robinson County Health Department and the UNC Health Southeastern worked very well with CORE, with making certain that with our vaccinators that we partnered with, we're able to get those vaccines to our Lumbee people.
And WRAL-TV also reports, Linda, that one tribe, the Halewa Saponi tribe, is still waiting for about $700,000 in funding from the American Rescue Plan. Is that still the case? Is that really the case? Let me check their reporting with you. And is it particular just to their tribe or to other tribes as well?
I don't work directly, or CORE doesn't work directly with the Halewa or the Halewa Saponi tribe. So unfortunately, I can't answer on their behalf either.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the American Rescue Plan dollars that came to the state of North Carolina, the Governor Cooper had recommended a certain part of those funds go to tribes in North Carolina, as well as the urban Indian organizations, as well as the Commission of Indian Affairs. Mm-hmm. That was in his budget recommendations to the General Assembly. I understand the General Assembly has reworked their budget and has reduced the amount that Governor Cooper had requested to go to tribes and urban organizations. And that's still part of their budget negotiations. I understand the General Assembly is going to work on their numbers or pass their budget today. And so we'll see exactly what the final recommendation will be in their budget.
This is a Native American Heritage Month. And today at the White House, they are beginning I'm trying to figure out what the name of it is. Help me out here. It's a convention, essentially. Say it again.
Tribal Nations Summit.
Tribal Nations Summit. Thank you. It's being hosted by the White House by Joe and Jill Biden. Kamala Harris will speak tomorrow at this. It's being held for the first time, I think, in about 5 years, because the Trump administration did not hold one of these, but they've been held in the past. How significant is it for the White House to be hosting this event?
It's very significant for them to have this. There should be definitely a government-to-government relationship with the federally recognized tribes. I think what's disappointing to me about this whole summit is that they do not include the state-recognized tribes. So even though the Lumbees is desperately working toward their federal recognition and the bill is coming up Wednesday, they're not included in this summit. So all the state-recognized tribes are sort of left out. However, do I feel like it's a great thing to have, because there should be some type of federal government relationship with the White House? It's a great thing. It should happen.
There are 570 tribes in the United States that are recognized and are expected to join in this two-day event. And you mentioned that the Lumbee tribe is not federally recognized. I believe there are eight so-called recognized tribes here in North Carolina. The Lumbee are not among them. Why? And explain the difference between being state recognized and being federally recognized.
Let me say that my people would be highly upset if I did not correct and say that we're not fully federally recognized. So we have, we're not fully federally recognized. And in the words of the government, the BIA, we're not federally recognized. But I'll let Curry explain the difference between all of that.
Sure. In North Carolina, we have eight state-recognized tribes, of which one of those is the Eastern Band of Cherokee, who do have full federal recognition. The Lumbee have a partial federal recognition. They were recognized in 1956 by the U.S. Congress as a tribe, but were not extended any of the benefits and services provided by the federal government at that particular time in history.
Because
during that particular time of history in the federal government, the government was looking to get out of the Indian business. So they were looking to terminate tribes. And as an example, the Menominee in Wisconsin was actually terminated because they were seen as being economically self-sufficient, because they had a very successful logging business at that particular time. And so they were actually terminated as a tribe, and other tribes across the country. The other six tribes in North Carolina are state recognized. So we're recognized by the state of North Carolina. We have that relationship directly with the state. We have a state commission of Indian Affairs, which provides recognition procedures for any tribe in North Carolina that seeks state recognition. And there's a particular set of requirements that those tribes must meet. And so what's interesting, though, about state recognized tribes, actually, is the executive director for the National Congress of American Indians, which is a national organization, the oldest in the country, has a state recognized tribal member as their president. And so that's very significant, because he will be at the White House Initiative on Indian Affairs in D.C., representing all American Indians in the country, but he is a member of a state-recognized tribe, the Saponi, which is in Person County.
Rebecca, the Lumbee Nation has been fighting for federal recognition, I understand, for 100,000 30 years, and there was hope that it would happen during the Trump administration. It did not. A bill passed in 2020 in the House. It failed to get backing in the Senate, despite the support of North Carolina's two senators, Tom Tillis and Richard Burr. In late October of this year, the Lumbee Recognition Act passed in the House on a voice vote, and the bill was sent then to the Senate. President Biden supports recognition. What's the status of that bill right now?
There is a hearing Wednesday where Chairman Godwin of the Lumbee Tribe will speak to testify at that hearing. So, I mean, we're all praying, really. I mean, we think there's a good chance, but we said the same thing when it came to the Trump administration. So I think it all just boils down to politics and, you know, how we're working the whole the Senate at the moment. So
is there bipartisan support? I'm assuming that Richard Burr and Tom Tillis still support recognition since they supported it during the Trump years. Is it bipartisan or is it just those two Republican senators in support?
It's got some bipartisan support, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the differences this time is that there's a democratically controlled Senate, mm-hmm. not by much, but it is democratically controlled. I think in the past there was a Republican dissenter from another state that held up a vote in the Senate to occur. That I'm not sure if they would have that same power now that they're not the majority power in the Senate.
Linda, federal recognition allows, as I understand it, benefits and services to be distributed to members of recognized tribes. How much money would that mean for the Lumbee Nation? How would it help your efforts at CORE to help members of that tribe in terms of what you do for hurricane recovery, other disaster relief, COVID relief, et cetera?
Oh, it would help us out tremendously. I mean, when we were preparing the grant for HRSA, it was assumed that the Lumbee people were fully, as Rebecca, and we do place that in quotes, fully federally recognized because it was assumed that we had access to Indian Health Services. And, of course, we did not. And possibly, maybe, if we had, you know, had access to that, our Lumbee people possibly would not have been in the position that we are now, so far behind with vaccinations. You know, there are a lot of factors when it comes to health disparities that can surface, you know, due to several factors, you know, poverty, environmental threats, inadequate access to health care, educational inequalities. I think those educational inequalities are possibly some of the reasons, too, if we really dig down deep. And, of course, we're working now with North Carolina Central University with their BRAVE project, trying to measure what we're doing here with our program and with our vaccine efforts to make sure that we are have the right programs in place. If you look at the dropout rate with the Lumbee Indians, it is a very large dropout rate with the Lumbees with dropping out of high school. And I think that's some of the reasons that possibly, too, that we may possibly be seeing the low rate with vaccines. So that goes back to what? Health disparities, educational inequalities. So this picture is a lot larger than just what we probably think it is, and it could go a lot farther than we think that it's actually going. And I think that's why it's so important, too, that CORE is here and CORE is doing what we are doing, access to vaccines. And this larger picture of trying to really figure out what is really going on here. Why are people not getting, or the Lumbees not getting vaccinated? And the health disparities that are occurring, and why are they occurring? And so, yeah, if the Lumbee people were fully recognized, the funding that could come in, and even going all the way back to hurricane response, which CORE began with hurricane response. The public crisis came in as an aftermath. I mean, it happened while we were building the program here in the county, while we were building the tribal community emergency response team for the Lumbee people, as well as a community emergency response team for the county. So it would bring in lots more funding. We just had to decline applying for a grant because the Lumbee people were not fully federally recognized.
Rebecca, I'm going to have to move on. Rebecca, some Native Americans say that they sometimes feel forgotten and invisible. And I'm going to ask you a very simple question. Is that because they are? And I ask because researchers at Penn State found that 87% of the content taught about Native Americans in this country is pre-1900. What happened pre-1900? Very little to nothing is taught in our schools about contemporary experiences of indigenous people. So is that why they feel forgotten and invisible?
It is. I mean, that's a serious issue in the education system. We are taught like we're non-existent, that, you know, all the Native Americans are no longer here. So, yeah, we do feel forgotten.
So what should the average American who doesn't come into contact with Native Americans very often know about your communities?
One, they need to know that more than likely they're coming in contact with a Native American, and they just don't realize they're coming in contact with a Native American because we don't have a sign over our head that says, hey, Native American here, but we're definitely here. And there's, you know, there's a lot of us in North Carolina, I think, and we're very valuable to this state. We're doctors, we're lawyers. I mean, we're teachers. And I think people just need to understand that we're here. We're very involved in the community.
And there is much criticism leveled at what is taught, even in the pre-1900 era. It's taught almost entirely from an Anglo point of view, with very few Native American perspectives on things like why treaties between Native Americans and the U.S. government failed, or about the removal of tribes from Native lands, great swaths of Native lands, and their confinement to reservations, etc. What, Curry, is the ultimate impact of that?
Well, I think people have this just misunderstanding that we only lived in the past, and we only have history that exists in the past. And like you were saying, I mean, there's not much taught about contemporary American Indian experiences. Like UNC Pembroke started out as an Indian normal school in the late 1800s. It's now one of the 16 UNC school system schools, and has a tremendous regional impact on education for that part of the state. Lumbee Bank. Lumbee Guaranty Bank was an Indian formed bank for our community because we didn't have access to banking facilities prior to the establishment of Lumbee Bank. And yet it's now a regional bank that exists in that part of the state. So we've had a lot of major accomplishments. Dr. Helen Sherbeck was very instrumental in the Indian Education Act that created the Indian Education Program nationally that benefits all Native Americans across the country. So we have these historical figures who have had an impact on Native Americans, not only in the state, but nationally, that people aren't aware of their contributions. We're very aware of Wilma Mankiller, but we're not aware of other Native Americans who have made an impact.
Rebecca, I have about 30 seconds left. We're in the midst of this very contentious conversation about how we teach the Black American experience here in this country, and we don't do a very good job of teaching the Native American experience. Are we in a similar place with that at the moment? Is that the next battleground for how we teach our history?
It is. I mean, it really is. I mean, tonight people can join me in Belmont, North Carolina at the Gaston County Board of Education, where we're protesting about the mascot. I mean, people in that community believe that if the mascot leaves, there's no more Native Americans. That's part of the education. So we have a serious issue when it comes to that.
I wish we had time to talk about that you're talking about South Point High School and the Red Raiders name, which some Native Americans would like to see go and others would not. Because if you're invisible already, removing symbols like the Washington Redskins, the Atlanta Braves, etc., could lead to a further disappearance. But we're out of time. Rebecca LeClaire, Curry Bird, and Linda Oxendine, thank you all for the hour. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.